The growing number of swine flu cases all around the world has set off a pandemic panic. But should it? On today's second underreported segment, we will look into the psychology behind disease panic and why our culture overreacts to some threats and underreacts to others. Dr. Robert Klitzman is Director of Ethics and Policy Corps at the HIV Center at Columbia University. He's also a member of the Department of Psychiatry there, and he's the author of numerous books, his latest being When Doctors Become Patients. I'm very pleased that he has joined me today on our show. Hello.
Hi.
So what do you think of the reaction to the swine flu outbreak so far? I don't know what word to even use. Outbreak, is that the right word?
Well, it could be epidemic, but I think what you raise is a question of what it means, what is the definition of epidemic, of pandemic, which is a word that we're beginning to hear now. And a lot of these things remain somewhat ill-defined. The problem is historically that we tend either to overreact or to underreact to epidemics, and it's hard to know what to do.
Well, do you think that the response has been proportional to the threat so far?
I think there have been a number of overreactions so far. So, for instance, if you look at calls to close the entire border with Mexico, and of course, those calls now come on the heels of previous calls to close the border because of illegal immigrants, to close it because of drug trafficking, and now it's here's another reason we can close the border. Similarly, the French government saying this is North American flu and several days ago saying that no one should get on an airplane to the United States, I think are overreactions.
Well, I want to play a clip of radio talk show host Michael Savage speaking on his radio show about the things he recommends people do to avoid contracting swine flu.
How do you protect yourself? What can you do? Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do, and I don't give a damn if you don't like what I'm going to say. I'm going to have no contact anywhere with an illegal alien. And that starts in the restaurants. You want intelligence? Stop eating in restaurants where they have undocumented workers in the kitchen. And you're risking your life, moron.
Well, of course, Michael Savage is known for his hyperbole and for anti-immigrant rants. But is he really upping the level of stigmatization of Mexicans?
Yes, there will be a fear, as with other epidemics, such as mad cow disease, such as AIDS, where epidemics, because there's uncertain fear that could be quite dangerous but may not be, we have a tendency to reawaken all our other fears. And many of us or many people fear other peoples out there geographically and will direct the fear at them.
Immigrants are often accused of being bearers of disease. I remember when AIDS first appeared and everybody said it was something that Haitians were bringing to the United States.
That's right. Exactly. And also the way we name diseases is important. If you look at the Black Plague, for instance, the British said it was the Dutch Plague. The Dutch called it the British Plague. Whoever your enemy is at the time or the people that you direct your ire at.
And the same thing happened with syphilis, didn't it? When it first swept across Europe in the late 15th century, the English called it the French Pox. The French called it Morbus Germanicus, and the Florentines called it the Naples sickness. The 1918 influenza pandemic was called the Spanish flu.
Yes, exactly right. And so the fact that there is a whole question now. The
Hong Kong flu we get as
exactly
well.
Exactly right, right. How often we name these things, the Asian flu or even avian flu, or SARS very much being identified with China and raising a certain amount of fear of Asians. I think an important point is that there are things that we can do, which is specifically, for instance, if you look at what is a rational response, there are 36,000 people who die every year of regular flu, and yet two-thirds of Americans do not take flu shots, which would be a very sensible thing to do in response to this. So I think there are ways that we can respond more rationally and learn from this pandemic of fear to help us.
Although the flu shots in this case have become problematic as well, and we'll get into that in a moment. The World Health Organization raised the alert level from 4 to 5 yesterday, meaning that we could be one step away from a full-blown pandemic. Either that or they've been listening to Michael Savage.
Yes.
In the face of news like that, don't people have cause to panic?
The issue is what that means and what appropriate response is. A problem is that panic is a very deeply seated biological phenomenon. We share it with reptiles. It's part of the limbic system that responds in panic because evolutionarily it makes sense. If there was a fear of a flood or you hear a roar of a lion, you better run. And those who didn't run got gobbled up. So it was good to be able to just run and not think. The problem is that now we have this button, this panic button that can be pressed very readily when it need not be pressed. And of course, the media, globalization, the internet can hype things up so that we fear the roar of the lion and there's no lion there.
In her 1988 essay, AIDS and Its Metaphors, Susan Sontag wrote that anything in history or nature that can be described as changing steadily can be seen as heading toward catastrophe.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, it's
important. So we assume the worst.
We assume the worst, and because we evolve such that better to be safe than sorry, we're risk averse, better to assume the worst and not get killed than not assume that and get killed. The problem is that sometimes there are these catastrophes, and we think there's a catastrophe, and there may not be one.
Well, I remember when the Ebola virus had a breakout,
right.
And how many people eventually were affected?
Certainly not more than 100 or so at most.
Well, you've done a lot of research into AIDS, mad cow disease, and other epidemics. How does our collective reaction to the emergence of swine flu compare to those others?
There's a few things. One is we don't know exactly what happened in Mexico initially. So there's a tendency, as with SARS in China, as I described in my book, The Trembling Mountain, a personal account of Kuru cannibals and mad cow disease. With mad cow disease, the British government at first basically ignored the threat. They didn't want to hurt the British beef industry. And so Mexico, too, may have downplayed it. We don't know yet, and hopefully in upcoming weeks we'll find out what happened. Finally, when it did hit, you even had Joe Biden this morning said he would not take a subway. So you have people overreacting in those kinds of ways. I think it's important to realize that there's a tendency to overreact and to act irrationally and to keep that in check.
Well, Joe Biden is famous for riding Amtrak, but not the New York subways.
That's right.
But there is a difference between some of those other illnesses. Swine flu has a relatively short incubation period. So even if Mexico had wanted to squelch it, within days, you would have seen people getting sick. AIDS and mad cow disease can lie dormant for years.
Correct. Again, the point with swine flu in Mexico is we don't know exactly how many cases, how long people were aware that there were cases before they brought it to the attention of the world media. I think that these are... In upcoming days and weeks, it's important to realize that there is uncertainty and to avoid finger-pointing. You also now have finger-pointing between Democrats and Republicans, where Democrats have said, how can the Republicans cut budgets for preparedness, which I think is a valid point. Republicans quickly counter, saying the Democrats are just being partisan. So I think we have to realize that the tendency is to overreact, which doesn't mean that at times we shouldn't do as much as we can.
Well, the fatality rate from swine flu is unknown yet, but it's thought to be significantly lower than the fatality rate of the other diseases we've been talking about and about some of the other diseases that are really big around the world, like dengue fever and diarrhea, which kill thousands and thousands. Do you think that the severity of our reaction has to do with how news of an emerging disease is introduced to the public? Are the media whipping up a panic here?
Well, the media has a role, the internet has a role, but as I was trying to say, we also have a panic button in us that we are drawn to go to horror films, many people, because we have evolved such that if there's something to panic about, we rivet our attention on it. I think it's important to realize in this case that 36,000 people die every year of the regular flu, that each day in America, over 100 people are killed in car accidents. And so far, there's only been one death from swine flu in the United States, and there's still under 200 cases. So we have many, many more people. People smoke. 20% of Americans smoke, and that leads to 500,000 deaths a year. So I think it's important to try to put some of these issues in perspective, and maybe this is an opportunity to give attention to some of the ongoing preventive health measures that we can take that we don't.
My guest is Dr. Robert Klitzman, Director of Ethics and Policy Core at the HIV Center at Columbia University, where he's also a member of the Department of Psychiatry. We are talking about the proportionality of the response to this swine flu epidemic as part of our underreported This is WNYC and WNYC.org. You mentioned being in Britain in the 1990s when mad cow disease broke out, and people continued to eat beef because the government had reassured them that it was okay.
Yes.
Well, in that case, perhaps people felt burned. The government reassured them when it shouldn't have.
Yes, I think there was both government response and as well as people saying that this is part of British tradition. We've always eaten beef. We like our beef. You know, what do you know? You're an American. I think that it was both government response playing in with the fact that the British beef industry is a multi-billion dollar industry and people's resistance to changing behavior. British beef consumption had dropped 50%, but at that time had gone back up to normal.
People aren't eating pork now, although there's it's been argued that there is no link between swine flu and eating any pork. This is something that is transmitted from animal to a live animal to person and then person to person.
Exactly. And of note also, just following up the mad cow disease in Japan, it's imports of beef from America are still banned. They refuse to eat our beef. And so people have fear could be huge and explosive and fluid, and people mark where they think they need to draw a line.
Well, once the mad cow disease turned up in humans, the British government killed nearly all the cows in the country. So do you think that that might have been an overreaction after they had had an underreaction?
I think so. If you look at what happened first, they banned feeding ground up sheep and cattle remains to cattle, but they still let sick cows go to market. Then they prevented sick cows going from market. But that depended on their ability to diagnose the cows, which was not very good. And no one watched what they were doing. They then banned cows' brains but let the rest of the cow go. So it was incremental and not enough in that case.
There was an earlier outbreak of swine flu disease in Fort Dix, New Jersey, and that was in 1976. Maybe we should listen to a little PSA from that time.
I don't need another flu shot. I had a flu shot last year.
A swine flu epidemic.
Swine flu shot? Well, I don't know. I've been thinking about it.
It could make you very sick.
Swine flu? Man, I'm too fast for that to catch me.
You'll want to be protected.
I'm the healthiest 55-year-old you ever seen. Hey, I play golf every weekend.
Get a shot of protection. The swine flu shot.
Now, that sounds sensible, but President Ford authorized a massive inoculation program, which inadvertently resulted in 32 deaths from Guillain-Barré syndrome. Nobody seemed to have seen any kind of association between the flu vaccine or the possibility of any danger from having that flu vaccine. That's not the flu vaccine they're using today, but still, isn't that another problem that we have to consider?
Yes. Again, I don't have the ready answer. In that case, what's interesting is 46 million doses of vaccines were given based on 20 cases, maybe up to 100 perhaps, depending how you who you talk to, of swine flu. And then hundreds of people got Guillain-Barré. So we have to be careful in one could say that was an overreaction. A part of the problem is that we want direct answers from science, but science often takes years to find an answer, and then we have to decide what to do. The tendency is, as I said, to sort of overreact, particularly sort of start stigmatizing and blaming people.
And that music made it kind of scary,
yes,
didn't it?
Yes, of course. Yes. The government plays on fears, but you know, the media and others can play on fears that we respond to.
Well, is that type of public health, public service announcement one that emphasizes fear effective?
No, we found that is not the best way to change people's behavior. For instance, HIV, saying, you know, you'll die of HIV has not worked that well.
Hasn't that fluctuated? We've gone through periods where people have been very careful to practice safe sex, and then when it didn't look like as many people were dying as we saw initially, people started taking chances again.
Yes, and now, of course, it's coming back up among young gay men. And, of course, you have the interesting case of South Africa where Mbeki, the president, has said that HIV does not cause AIDS. And there have been millions and millions of people who are who've died of AIDS in South Africa as a result. So again, that would be a denial, and partly in the face of the threat, it's easy to say no, it can't be true, or to say, look, it's out there, protect ourselves.
But even there, we see something interesting. If you speak to people outside of South Africa and mention Thabo Mbeki's name, they'll all say the same thing. He's the guy who denies that HIV causes AIDS. If you speak to South Africans, they say that is such a minor part of his legacy in this country. They see us as having a disproportional response.
You have to remember, in there are parts of South Africa where 40 or 50% of the young people are HIV infected, where in certain colleges, 40% of the young women are HIV infected. That is devastating. I would say that someone who says that the HIV epidemic is, quote, minor is is really missing the issue there. I mean, it has devastated that country and continues to devastate the country. When you have rates of 30% in the population in some areas, all of which could be prevented. HIV is not transmitted through casual contact, unlike potentially swine flu. It's transmitted directly through sexual encounters or other things, so it's very much preventable.
People are wearing masks. Do masks actually work with a virus like this?
Well, masks is an interesting phenomenon. When I've been in Japan and others have noted too, many people wear masks. In our culture, it's stigmatized. If you walk around with a mask, people think there's something really wrong with you. I would argue that we need to really consider wearing masks more often. In the case of swine flu, if you have symptoms, you should stay home. That's clear. But people with milder colds in Japan wear masks, and arguably once the swine flu epidemic passes, perhaps we should consider doing the same.
Is part of the problem that many people feel helpless in uncertain situations like this? Do you think that's one of the reasons that so many people are going out and trying to buy up anyway the supplies of Tamiflu and Relenza?
Yes, absolutely. People do feel helpless, and I think this could be an opportunity to direct people to think about their health more broadly, even things, diet, exercise, et cetera. And of course, even though they're commonsensical things, washing your hands, et cetera, getting proper nutrition, eating well, proper sleep are all very important things that we should all continue.
AIDS was something that we didn't really see coming, but haven't public health officials predicted an outbreak of this nature for some time now, whether it's the swine flu or avian flu or SARS or something else?
Yes. Well, the fact that you're able to name so many of them is part of the issue, is that because we're in a more globalized world, it's possible for these epidemics to spread much more than they ever did in history. So it's possible if I am sick for me to get on a plane, and within 24 hours I can be literally anywhere in the world taking whatever kind of germs I have with me. And so we have the ability to spread these diseases from pockets where people may have immunity to elsewhere. And so we can list these diseases in recent epidemics, and those will continue.
And if the airlines weren't suffering enough, this is really going to hurt them, because I'm sure many people don't want to fly right now. And I think Aeromexico might not survive.
Yes. Well, Mexico is one case. There become issues. I mean, if Spain has 5 cases, should we not fly to Spain? If Britain has 7 cases?
New York.
Where do we draw the line? I mean, so far, my understanding is that the vast majority of cases, though importantly not all, have been those that have been to Mexico or had direct contact with people who have.
There were even concerns earlier this week that President Obama might have contracted swine flu after he visited Mexico in mid-April. Of course, that turned out not to be true. But maybe we should listen to a little clip from his speech or his conference last night.
The most important thing right now that public health officials have indicated is that we treat this the same way that we would treat other flu outbreaks, just understanding that because this is a new strain, we don't yet know how it will respond. So we have to take additional precautions, essentially take out some additional insurance.
So do you think that he is handling this well?
I think so. But of course, even his statement, there is reason for, quote, concern but not panic, right? What that means. I mean, panic becomes irrational. Interestingly, there seem to be two messages he was giving there. On the one hand, it's like other flus. On the other hand, we need to do something extra. And I think that makes sense because we don't know. And yet there's some evidence that the, quote, regular flu, in fact, is more deadly than this flu. So, again, we still don't know. We need to be careful, but, again, not overreact. And I think as we hear what people are doing and think about it, we need to realize that there is a impulse to do irrational things and to keep that in check.
But it is interesting to contrast it with what Vice President Biden was saying this morning. He said we should avoid airplanes and other confined public spaces like the subways.
Yes. Well, it's important to keep in mind, again, that each day over 100 Americans die in car accidents, for instance. People don't wear seatbelts. So I think we have to put in perspective what the dangers in our life are. I mean, I may walk out and a meteor may hit me in the head. That doesn't mean we should say everyone should walk around helmets all the time. So and yet there are bicycle riders who don't wear helmets and who can have accidents that are quite grave. So I think we need to we over-respond to in the face of uncertainty to a new threat. And I think it's important to try to put in perspective what the threats are in our lives and how we should rationally respond.
So is that just the problem, that this is a new threat, that we have become comfortable with all the previous threats because in some cases they turned out not to be much. In other cases, we have figured out ways to control them. AIDS, for example, there are drugs that keep it in check. We hope for a cure somewhere down the line, but we're not sitting in fear of cancer, and yet cancer continues to be an incurable condition.
Right. And mind you also, there are 40 million Americans without any health insurance. And in terms of the priorities of our society I think this is an opportunity to look at some of those. But yes, you're absolutely right that because a threat is uncertain, it's easy to imagine the worst. If there's a closet and it's dark in there, I can imagine there are ghosts. In fact, it may just be an empty closet. But it's easy to imagine that the worst possible things are lurking.
Do you think that the fear of things like swine flu have been amplified by the fear of terrorist attacks? After all, Homeland Security is really in charge of this.
Yes, it's quite interesting that is the case. What's interesting, of course, is we do need to have good disaster preparedness plans. We did not have that with 9/11. Even those dollars, though, in terms of where the homeland dollars have gone, have not always been the most rational. So I think, interestingly, the fact that it's from the Middle East, that it's from Mexico and not the Middle East, I think have dampened some of the connections. But clearly the fact that Homeland Security, the Homeland Security czar is up there talking about this is of note.
Dr. Robert Klitzman is Director of Ethics and Policy Corps at the HIV Center at Columbia University. He's also a member of the Department of Psychiatry at Columbia. Thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
On tomorrow's show, Bill Charlap joins me on Please Explain with a look at how jazz improvisation works. Then filmmaker Anne Akyon on her new movie, Ice People. Chef Bill Telepan and Brooklyn Food Conference organizer Nancy Romer discuss how the challenges facing the global food economy impact us here in New York. Plus, New York Times White House correspondent Peter Baker looks ahead to President Obama's next 100 days in office. Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. We need help today from Drew Katchen and Virginia Doris. Debbie Fountain was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.